Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mental Leap, the show that places power in your hands and information for your mind. Let others leave small lines, but not you. Let others place their future in someone else's hands, but if you listen to the show, you'll make sure it's not you. We'll provide you with the keys, but it's up to you to unlock the door. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Today, we're doing part two of A Life Worth Living with Andre Joaquin. Last week, he went into his powerful story of transformation. Most of us stop when we hit a roadblock and when we set failure, when we make a mistake, we just stop. We give up and we continue on that course because we believe there's no hope for us. But here's an individual who made mistakes. He said, I'm going to get it right. Then he made a mistake. He did something wrong. But the fact that he didn't give up, he persevered, is key to what we have going on today. A lot of us think we're stuck. And hopefully with his story and where he is now, it will help you to understand that you can get unstuck. The mental roadblock, the physical environment that you are in, it may be hard, but it's simple. You can get out. Andre, how you doing today, bro?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me back.
All right, cool. So let's do a recap.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, you know what, just give your bio real quick, very briefly.
Well, you know, bio, okay. Well, I've been in trouble with the law since the age of 15, went to prison four times. Four-time prison, I decided to change because I had two sons before I went in and realized it's not something that I wanted to teach them. I did not want to leave that legacy of incarceration with them because I wanted them to know there's more to life.
Right.
And worth living than being incarcerated. And when I realized that, that's when I started living. And so when I came out, I started getting educated. I started going to school and I got my associates. Then I graduated, then moved on. And then I pursued my bachelor's, graduated, moved on. And then I obtained my master's just this year, and I've moved on, and now I'm pursuing my doctoral degree.
Right. Now, that's powerful, because many of us will just stop and be satisfied. And you're not satisfied until you fulfill everything within you.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is that beautiful, it's fulfilling, and that should empower others. And I think it has, based on the response we've got.
Mm-hmm.
You have impacted a lot of people. I've got contacted by a lot of people. The show has been listened to over and over. And people are talking about how inspirational your story was. It's a story of redemption.
Right.
It's a beautiful story. So today, we're going to talk about the struggles of reintegrating into society and being accepted. You know, the change you have to go through, because change isn't easy. Knowing what to do is simple. The process, you know, is the struggle. Working with at-risk youth, which you do.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to address the conflict that's going on with police and black men. And then we're going to talk about violence in general in the American community.
Right.
All right. So let's go into the struggles of reintegrating. So now you're out.
Yeah.
And you've been to Joliet Junior College.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like getting out? How were you treated?
I think the problem with getting out is the mindset and where I was at. I think prior before to my last incarcerations, I had the mindset that I couldn't do anything different than what I was doing. So I went back to selling drugs. This time when I got out, I knew I had to make a change. And what making a change meant was changing my surroundings, changing who I affiliated with, meaning like hanging out with friends and, you know, staying out, going to the club every night and focusing on doing more productive things in life.
Right. How is that, though? Because you have these friends for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to separate or were you able to stay around them?
Well, you know, this is how I took that into consideration. I realized, like, when I was locked up, I didn't have anyone sending me money. So those so-called friends that were supposed to be my friends, you know, no one bothered to send me a dollar. The only people that sent me money was my older brother and my mother. You know, those were the people that I had to rely on. And so coming home, it made it simpler. Okay, who can I depend on? My family. And so, you know, I was fortunate to, you know, even though I spoke about me and my mother's past relationship, our current relationship is good, you know, and she was very supportive when I came home, gave me a place to stay. And I was able to focus on rebuilding me and focus on education, which is something that, you know, I wholeheartedly embraced.
So when you decided to be around a new group of people,
mm-hmm.
were they very accepting, or did you find it hard to, you know, break with the old and go with something new?
I think it was very hard for me because my thoughts, you know, and how I viewed life, I was like, you know, put in a place where there's all these people that I've never associated with. So I had a fear of socialization because I was fearing how people would judge me and perceive me once they got a chance to know me. So, you know, it was very hard to be in the college setting, and it was scary at the same time. You know, I had a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, not to mention that I had a house arrest bracelet around my leg. And just going into school, just fearing that someone will find out and people would shun me. And once I got into the school setting and I started showing that I really did belong, showed that I was serious about integrating into society, in the educational system, I was accepted. Because why? Because I made good grades. And not only that, I had a professor, you know, because there are professors, there are people in the community that's willing to accept you and promote you because they see how hard you're working. And, you know, when you work hard, you are rewarded, you know. So once I got a chance to be in the presence of that professor, she helped me. She helped me to see that, okay, there are socially acceptable things. Not everybody is blessed with the opportunity to come in contact with a professor that will take their time out, introduce you to their family, and also speak to you about certain things and how to present yourself in social aspects and social scenarios and whatnot. And when I came around this professor, there was a lot of other people who flocked around her as well. And I started building my community of people that are like-minded, who wants to get an education, who wants to do something, who wants to further their life. So when you surround yourself with people who have the same goals and ideologies, you'll be amazed how things take off from there, and you start being introduced to different opportunities, which happened to me. Just getting involved in the community, fundraising, volunteering, all these things started having an impact on who I was and who I started to become, and it started shaping my life. And it also spoke to me about, wow, these are the same type of people I want in my son's life. So in both my son's lives. And so if I'm going to model this type of behavior, I have to model the type of people they should expose themselves to.
Yeah, that's powerful. You know, the main reason that I dropped out of high school at 16,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't because I was some bad ass person. And
right.
I had this grandiose idea. It was for the simple fact that I had this idea for so long of who I see myself as. But right. the environment that was around me and the environment I helped create around me,
right.
the expectation I helped create for me, I couldn't shake it. You know what I mean? It was
mm-hmm.
who I was. I just could not shake it. And I thought that the only thing I could do, because I remember the dean like wanting to do all these different things. I want to suspend you and just finding reasons to get me in trouble with the law. I didn't want to be in trouble with the law. You know, I didn't want any of those problems anymore. I wanted to, you know, do what was right. And it was hard in that environment.
Right.
So I decided to drop out. And mm-hmm. once I got on NIU's campus, I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to the Center for Black Studies every day. But I'm in a whole new environment now. And it was positive. I had people I could look up to. These are individuals trying to get an education.
Right.
You know, and I was trying to live up to that hype. You know what I mean? So it made me want to become a better person. I dressed different. You know, I was reading books like crazy, which is a habit I picked up at that age. And now I read books like crazy. So a lot of us go into a situation thinking, okay, you know, these are my friends. I'll be all right. And then you end up going right back to the same thing. Sometimes you have to separate yourself from that environment and you need to get away. You need to be around a whole new group.
True.
You know, you need to be uncomfortable because it is uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but being uncomfortable is actually a good thing.
Definitely. And just to piggyback off that, you know, when you spoke about you started dressing differently, like I remember that same professor, Margo Underwood, used to tell me, you need to stop wearing those baggy pants. Stop wearing those sweatpants and everything. And, you know, at first I was like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. I feel comfortable and that's good. But the minute I started dressing differently, I noticed that other things, people started looking at me differently as well. So just changing up just something simple as the way you dress. Then when I got here to NIU, it was different as well, you know, just leaving that environment of Joliet, because even when I was still there, I still had people, you know, and I can still say that I was still on the fence of getting an education and being in the street. Then I remembered a lot of times when I left Joliet, that's the times I prospered most. So I decided, you know, I'm going full-fledged into this education. And I left the streets where people were offering me drugs to go ahead and sell. Like, hey, you can get back on. You know, you still time. You could sell drugs. You could do this. You could do that. You can hang with us. You can get money. Those things became less important. And what started becoming more important is being a role model for my sons, my nephews, you know, my nieces, and for other people who are getting out of prison, because a lot of people who get out of prison, they feel like they can't do it. No, I want to show you that you can do it, because I've seen other people, you know, like, I know some aspects of my story is unique, but there are people who get out of prison and turn their life around and become productive members of society. So this is what I want to live to. I want to be that story that other people may not be able to relate to, but they can look back and be like, wow, he did something tremendous. Not everybody will do.
Everybody has the ability, but everybody doesn't have the patience and the foresight.
That's true.
So now you're in a new environment.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start finding your niche? What was it like? Yeah, I'm getting there, you know. Was it after your associates, after your bachelor's, in between, master's?
I remember when I first got here to NIU, I was just very, you know, nervous again because, like, I've left JJC, Jolie Junior College, and now I'm at a bigger place where it's more people. And when I just left JJC, by the time I left there, when I first came in, I didn't know anybody. By the time I left there, I knew everybody,
right.
You know, from career service to OMSA, OSA, to the people in the psych department, sociology department, I was, you know, to the campus police. I felt comfortable. I felt at home. When I came here, I didn't feel at home. I felt like a fish out of water. I was scared, nervous, and I didn't have any real support except for one of my friends who came here from Jolie Junior College herself. And I remember Julia, she was my only support system here. And I saw how easy it was for her to make friends. So I decided to try to make friends as well. And it was hard, but I continued on. I pressed on. I joined different clubs. One of the professors that I was taking from the sociology, I listened to him talk one day, and he was saying that he did an ethnography study in Stateville. And I disclosed to him, like, yeah, I was there in Stateville. And he was like, wow. He said, you're here now, you was in Stateville? And he was like, man, I can't believe that. I'm glad you're here. Because Stateville is like one of the worst prisons in Illinois. But something to be in one of the worst prisons in Illinois to come out and be at a university, it's like, wow. So talking with him, he introduced me to Jack King. Then Jack, he introduced me to Peggy Carey. Peggy Carey introduced me to Donna Malton, Donna Larson. And just those connections and those relationships I continually fostered, these people saw something more than someone who had been in prison and incarcerated. Like, they believed in me. Time there was there was a rule about not letting people mentor kids or youth at risk of incarceration at all because they didn't want that. But Peggy was so adamant about, hey, this guy is different. We need to get him. And she started having me mentor youth that were on probation. And I found a passion in that because I'd seen something in them that other people didn't see. I saw me, and it was like me going back in time and speaking to myself, telling them like, hey, what are you doing? Have you thought about what you're doing? And just talking with them and listening to them, which is something that a lot of people don't take the opportunity or the chance when they come across kids who are getting in trouble or youth, teenagers that have been in trouble. So that was my niche. That was my field. And then when I started doing that and when I got ready to graduate, the same youth that I was mentoring, he was like, hey, you know, what are you thinking about doing? I was like, well, I was thinking about going for my master's degree. He's like, what do you think about it? I was like, well, I'm kind of stuck between two. And I told him the two. He's like, you should definitely go for counseling because I think you would be an amazing counselor. Because the things we talk about, you you helped me look at these things before I make these mistakes. And I was like, wow. And I found myself going there into the counseling program. And then it kind of went forth because the counseling program embraced me. I couldn't believe it. And right there, when I got in the master's program, that's where I kind of found my voice, because the professors was like, hey, Andre, you have a unique story and you can impact the lives of many people. And I'll never forget this professor by the name of Dr. Rush. He had told me, he's like, you know what? You're going to change a lot of lives because you have a perspective that no one can relate to, from being in prison and being in a counseling program and being able, you might be able to change people's views and thoughts about working with ex-offenders and working with people who have been incarcerated or in and out of the jail system and the court system and whatnot. So that kind of empowered me. Mm-hmm. And I was able to share with my classmates that I had been in prison. That was my first step. And once I was able to share with them, I found it a little bit easier to share with everyone, because it struck me how I was feeling those emotions of regret from the things I did in the past. But when I was empowered, I realized how my past can have an impact on someone else's future. It set a whole new tone and opened up a whole new world for me.
That's big. So how do you, a lot of us carry burdens from the past. Mm-hmm. You can't change them.
That's
We're
true.
Different people, but the past isn't different. And some of us wrestle with that. You faced it, right? How do you deal with it? And you're a counselor as well. So
mm-hmm.
what is a good method for dealing with it? How did you, what you do to say, man, I did this, I'm at peace with it, or I'm going to work this off? What exactly did you do? And how did you approach it?
I think it's about taking ownership uh-huh. of the things you did and accepting that sometimes you have to accept, okay, I was given these set of tools. You know, it's almost like you're giving a screwdriver to fix a car. And we all know you're going to need more than a screwdriver to fix a lot of different things on a car. So I wasn't given the tools or blessed with the necessary resources that others were provided with. So I used the tools at the time that I did have. And even though those tools weren't effective, I didn't go seeking or trying to find what those other tools were. I just accepted, well, these are the tools I have. Then once I came to realize that there were other tools out there, then it was on me to go ahead and go find those tools that I needed to go ahead and change my circumstances. So I was able to get the ratchet sets and everything that I would need to fix that car. I was able to go to another auto mechanic for consultation. So, you know, that kind of continually rolled that, and I picked up momentum. And once I found my momentum, I continue to go. Because some people I know from my experience, and I've known from everywhere, from Inglewood to Rockford to Joliet to the Quad Cities. And when they grow up on a block, they stay there. They're afraid to leave. And for a guy who came all the, like, from Brooklyn to Trinidad to Joliet and has traveled all around, one thing I can definitely say, I've never been afraid to go. Once I make up my mind, I'm like, hey, it's time for me to get going. And the fact that I have that in me to go ahead and that drive to go ahead and leave, I can't sit still unless I know what I'm doing is right or if it's benefiting me. And now I'm here, I'm in a community, and I'm embraced and loved in this community. So I want to continue to contribute to this community because it's contributed so much to my growth and development as a man. You know, I remember last week I said sometimes it takes a village to raise a man. And I would say from everywhere, from Joliet Junior College to NIU, they've helped contribute to my mindset, because I think another part of getting out of prison, you know, is a level of maturity and immaturity. So sometimes when guys do go in and they immature, they stay at that maturity level when they went in, and when they get out, they're reintegrated back into society at that same maturity level when they went in, you know. And like I said, I just had in my mind that I know I need to change. I didn't know how I was going to make that change, but I knew I had to make a change. And I wasn't going to stop until I found those resources to make that change.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. A lot of us don't have the knowledge. And I heard Dr. Umar Johnson say, and I think I said this before, we tend to say, look, my car is broke. And we'll go out there and try to fix the car without the knowledge and without the right tools. And we mess it up even more. It's good to know that I don't know, and then find out, and then be able to get the tools to help you correct whatever it is. I thought that was very good. So now you're into counseling. And, you know, it's a lot going on right now. You know, it's not just one problem. It's not just, and I really hate that we do this. We try to separate life, and life is one indivisible whole. So you have a lot of violence going on in communities, which is a symptom of something. Then you have what's going on in policing or with police in the Black community or against the Black community and others. But that's the most prominent thing we're seeing right now. And then we have this whole violence thing going on. I mean, a man that lost his law firm, and I'm not sure if that's the reason, but that was the story given. He was just shooting people who were driving by, and he shot 9 people. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is at the root of this, first of all? Let's deal with the at-risk youth first.
Well, if we just speak about what's going on, the violence that's going on in some of the communities, especially preferably amongst African Americans and Black communities, you know, I think it's more of a systemic issue, you know, especially if you look at some of the Black communities and whatnot. It's people living on top of people. And if you look at the project before they started tearing them down, people were living on top of people, were living on top of people, were living on top of people. That itself is a problem. You put a bunch of people in with very little resources and you tell them, okay, pull yourself up by the bootstrap, and let's see what happens. That doesn't make sense. I don't see any parts of that that make sense at all. You know, and when people fight over the very little resources, yeah, it begets violence. But we're talking about a system that has been oppressive for hundreds of years. And since, you know, America decided to take a turn, and they've making, yeah, steps, but these steps are really small steps. They're not very large steps, because they say change happens over time. So I wonder how long this time is supposed to be, and whose time will these changes occur, because they don't plan on these changes taking over in the next. They don't give it, okay, another 10 years, things will be better. You know, we're going to be, everybody will forget about slavery and the Jim Crow days and everything like that. Nah, how can you forget that? How can the next, it's because it's passed on to generation to generation to generation, and these things are embedded in the minds and the thoughts of one generation to the next. And when you see different things and different nuances going on in your community, sometimes people lose hope and they just accept it because it becomes norm. And since it's become normative, they pass on the next set of ideologies onto their children. Not all the time. There are some families that pass on good values and morals and ideologies to their children. But when you're growing up in neighborhoods where what your parents speak is the opposite going on around you, sometimes you'll be like, well, they don't know what they're talking about, because, you know, what I see every day is violence. I see drugs. I see gang banging. So it's almost like a sense of hopelessness. And how do we go forth from there and spread a different message? And not all communities, like, you know, are devoid of someone who spreads positive messages, because there's a lot of people in the Black communities that spread positive and influence, but one, two, or three, or four, or even 20 people could only do so more. I mean, do so much in a community that's needing like maybe a couple hundred of Black role models, males and females, or 1,000 or 5,000 that is needed. And some people are so focused on just trying to get by, they can't even spare that time or that moment, because they have to spend that time at work and they have to try to spend that time on their own children, much less trying to be a role model to someone else's child.
So today, September 27th, 2016, if we did one thing today that would impact tomorrow and the next day and the next day, what is that one thing?
Well, I would say the reintegration from prison to the community needs to be reformatted, because when you get out of prison, you're kind of stuck with the stigma of being incarcerated and having a felony on your background. So when you go out to the community, you can't even get a job that will really take care of your family. So that's definitely one way to impact, because sometimes people get out of prison and all they want to do is make a living, because they just got through doing their time. They're like, well, you know, I need to take care of my family because I've been gone so long, and, you know, Junior needs new shoes, and, you know, baby girl, she needs to get some type of laptop or whatever she might need to excel in school. And then when you get out and you make an ends meet, you start thinking like, wow, this is not really working. And you start thinking about, well, what else can I do to make a little side money or whatever? then those old patterns and old thoughts start creeping back in your head, and you start thinking like, well, you know, I was making more money and I was taking more of a risk, but I'm a smarter individual now because I went to prison. I came out. I'm a little bit smarter. I kind of know what they're doing now. And those irrational thoughts invade and take over when you're trying to pay those bills for family. So I would say make jobs more accessible, like not just jobs, decent paying jobs. You know, those felonies that weigh someone down when they get out, you know, give someone a chance to earn their way back in society. Wow. And not have those felonies. I know guys who have been working warehouse jobs, like for temp agencies, 7 years after they get out of prison, and they're barely making over minimum wage, but they're like working themselves into the ground, you know, 12-hour and 14-hour days because they can't further themselves. And since they can't further themselves, they can't further their families.
As a society, society doesn't give a care. It doesn't put a proper value on human life and human worth. So if an individual goes to jail to pay his debt, and that's what you're supposed to be doing, you're supposed to be paying a debt. This is a punishment. Corrective action should be placed in it, not let's just lock you away. And let's, you know what, get cheap labor out of this as well. Corrective action, so when you come back into society, you're given that, you know, you embraced. I have value in you, you know. I was telling you earlier, when I see young men on the street that aren't doing what I know they're supposed to be doing, I purposely tell them, hey, man, you know, I see God in you. And that kind of shakes them up a little bit.
Right.
But naturally, we should look at people and see God. You see what I'm saying?
True.
We should have value in them. It shouldn't be like, man, this dude a criminal. How many people didn't get caught? So because this guy went to jail, we're going to throw him away. And how many people can you throw away before those people you've thrown away now start to be a problem because they have nothing to do? In idle time, you know, people will find something to do with that. We call it a devil's workshop, but we have to take the time. And we don't have to put it on the individuals who go away. It should be the individuals who are responsible enough and who are putting the system together. And we should be able to say, look, we need to reinvest into them and let them know, hey, we still value you. Now, there are some things that carry a little more weight than others. But
true.
You know what? We still value you, and we want you to value you, because if you value you, then you're going to value the next individual. You know what I'm saying? Because you'll see yourself in them. And I think that undergirds a lot of the problems in the day.
Right.
A lot of individuals, we become cops or police officers, and I am a police officer for anybody listening that doesn't know. And I watch people that forget who they were, and now they're treating people the way they didn't want to be treated. You know what I mean? Well, you're a servant. You know what I mean? You're not here to bully people because now you got a little power. Let's say it's 300 police officers versus 2,000 people. Who has the power? No matter what that badge says, the real power is in our humanity. I'm still a man, you still a man. That's still a woman, you know?
True.
So in dealing with that, how do we get to the young black males who are out on the street just living? You know what I mean? They're not progressing. They're getting used to the way things are, and it's taking them on a decline that they don't see. What are some methods we can use to address that?
You know, speaking out, I think it starts with the education, the whole education system, speaking out about what's going on in society, because we see it every day. But if it doesn't apply to us, we sometimes people ignore it. And I'm talking about my brothers and sisters of whiteness. who have that white privilege behind their back, shaking up the very foundation of the education system to point out these inconsistencies in society. Because, you know, if we look at it, that people do go to prison because they commit a crime. But when they come out, they serve their time, but they can't get jobs. That's almost like a double jeopardy.
Yeah, it is.
It's almost like a double jeopardy. You serve your time, you know, you paid your debt to society, but we're not going to exactly let you back into society because we're not going to pay you, or we're not going to give you a job because we feel that you haven't really proved, even though you paid your debt to society. And I'm talking about, it could be just a misdemeanor charge. It could be something as little as driving on a suspended license, but now you have a felony in your background. It could be someone who was selling like marijuana, you know, to try to take care of their family or whatever, pay bills. You know, it could be someone who was selling coke to take care of their bills or whatever. Whatever the case, it could be someone who made a mistake and got caught with a gun or something, but now they have this felony that's not letting them progress in life. It speaks to different levels of systematic oppression, systemic repression that's being rationalized that, okay, well, they did mess up, that's on them. No, it's not that simple. Because how are we going to progress as a society if we preach about forgiveness or say that someone has to pay their debts and when they get out, we don't forgive them? We don't embrace them as a society. What's that going to do? That can breed hatred. That can breed, you know, that breeds so negative symptoms in ideology in one's mind as where they belong at within their community. And it spreads a ripple effect that doesn't only just impact this individual, but impacts their children or possibly grandchildren or their nieces and nephews and whatnot. It's bigger than just that one person. And unless people speak out about it, it's going to continue to happen. I even remember, you know, I think about when the shooting happened with I think it was Philando Castile. Yeah. And, you know, it can be something as small as checking on your coworker that's black or brown and asking them how they're doing. How are you doing today? You know, I heard what happened. How's that impacting you? I did not have one coworker that was like, initiated that conversation. What does that say as a society when these types of things happen, where you see the racial profiling and you say nothing and you do nothing because you never know what your voice is going to carry, what type of impact it's going to make?
That is huge, because individually we're like small drops, you know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those small drops are like an ocean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a lot of power in that. And we tend to think one can't do much. And one can do a lot. If one is able to convince two, and two can convince three. You know what I mean? There's power in numbers. And it's a whole thing. It doesn't affect me. It affects you, even if you don't feel it. It's going to affect you somewhere down the line, because everything is connected in some form or another. And I tend to believe that the reason we're having a lot of problems in the country today and in the world is based on how the country was formed in the 1700s.
True.
We're dealing with that now. You see what I'm saying? And it does tell you, it shows me, you got to start things the right way. Your integrity has to be right. Your character has to be in place.
Very true.
And with young men and women on the streets, no matter what color they are, really, I mean, they feel left out.
Yeah.
And it does need to be more people in the society able to reach them. It is hard, though, when you just see them walking around and they're so, you know, they're out of touch. You know, that they really don't care. They've given up, and this is their way of surviving. And you want to open their mind up to such a bigger world, you know, so much more to it, you know, than just this small thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of the reasons I've heard from either coworkers or school peers is that no one wants to bring up the subject of race, and they don't want to acknowledge that they have privilege over someone else because they will be forced to look at themselves. Or they'll be faced to look at what's really going on in society and address that themselves. So, and while we continue to make race such a taboo thing, you know, it's never going to go further in our conversations. And when people start having conversations, that's when people start problem solving how to address these issues. And once you start problem solving how to address those issues, you put those thoughts and words into action. And that's how things start taking place and start formatting and reformatting.
So we got 10 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
You do a lot of mentoring and counseling.
Yeah.
So going to at-risk youth, let's go back to that.
Okay.
What is it that the majority of us are missing when we speak with them? What are some things we can do or implement that will help turn their lives around?
You know, I remember when I started mentoring, and the woman who runs the program in DeKalb named Peggy, she's like, she asked me, what do you think you need to do to impact the lives of youth? And I was like, I need to give them advice. I need to be able to give them advice and tell them what they need to do so they will get it right. You know? And she was like, no. All you need to do is listen. And it's simple. And I didn't think it was that simple until I started listening, not even interrupting, just hearing what their thoughts were, building a relationship with them, a trusting relationship with them, where they feel safe enough to talk, where they can talk about anything. And just listening to them and not giving your advice. Now, once you build that relationship with them, they may ask for your advice. So you give them your thoughts. And as long as your thoughts impact them in a pro-social manner or speak to being, what's the word I'm looking for? I would say just being present and available to them and speaking to, like, thinking about the future or thinking about the possibility of what can go wrong if they go through and they do something, you know, maybe even speaking from your experience that caused them to think like, wow, I almost made that same choice, but I'm glad I didn't. And then even speaking to, you know, those positive skills that they possess, like, man, you know, like I would say some of the youth that I've mentored, like they, like at their age, they're smarter than I was. So I was like, man, you're much smarter than me. So I know you're not going to make that same foolish mistake and think that that's really going to pay off because you're much smarter than I was. Like if you wasn't as smart as me, you know, you wouldn't even caught that or you wouldn't catch that or realize that, you know, that would be something that wouldn't be beneficial towards you. And listening without judging, because sometimes we listen, but we don't really listen. And when someone says something, we pass judgment against them. We're the judge, jury, and executioner and tell them, no, you don't do it that way because you're going to get in trouble and you start. And sometimes they just tend to just like tune you out. And once they tune you out, how are they ever really going to listen to anything positive you might have to say that may benefit them and pursuing something that they want to pursue in life? So I would say the main thing is to listen.
Look, I appreciate you for coming on. Look, man, hearing your story, for me, it just speaks volumes of all the work we still have to do within ourselves. Not even out there. A lot of the things we need to do in here, that will attract the things we need in the outer world or realm, however we want to say it. Appreciate you for coming on, sharing your story. A lot of people don't want to do that. They want to hide who they are.
Right.
You know, and no judgment on anybody for that. I mean, I had an individual the other day say, man, I ain't never told nobody this, but I'm from the ghetto. He's like 50-something years old. And I just thought to myself, wow, you know how many people that could have helped years ago? I didn't even think it was that bad of a thing, but the fact that you're willing to go out and tell your story and be a servant for others and listen to people. I had the opportunity to listen to you on a few occasions, and it does make you reflect. It makes you want to become a better person, you know, and live your best life. A lot of us don't live our best life. We live a life, but it's not our best life. And so I'm very appreciative of you for coming on the show. Is there anything you want to say in closing?
Well, you know, for me, just to piggyback on what you said, I feel like I walked around 30-some years in a walking coma. Walking, functioning, but really asleep. You know, now I'm awake. And I want to do the things that I should have been doing while I was asleep. So for everybody that's out there that's walking around in those sleeping comas, it's time to wake up. It's time to wake up and become alive and start living life.
Look, I appreciate you. It's time to wake up. We're going to end the show a little different. We're going to end the show with this quote from Will Smith. I'm going to let him talk. And it's real powerful to me. And we'll go out like that. Thank you for listening, everyone.
I don't want to be an icon. I want to be an idea. You know, I want to represent an idea. I want to represent possibilities. I want to represent magic, right? That you're in a universe and 2 + 2 = 4.
Mm-hmm.
2 + 2 only equals 4 if you accept that 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 2 is going to be what I want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a redemptive power that making a choice has, you know, rather than feeling like you're at effect to all the things that are happening. Make a choice. Like, you just decide what it's going to be, who you're going to be, how you're going to do it. Just decide. And then from that point, the universe is going to get out your way.